Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Women Leading the Way Radio Show, where each time you'll hear from successful women CEOs, executives, and professionals, where we'll discover how they do what they do to be successful in business. We'll be interviewing women who have overcome big challenges, women who have incredible stories of lessons learned in dealing with adversity. We'll even interview women who have started and grown successful organizations and women who are C-level executives with unique talents and positions. Our goal is to bring successful businesswomen together to share how they're leading the way in business today.
Good morning and welcome to Women Leading the Way Radio, brought to you by Connected Women of Influence. And thank you for joining me again this month, ladies. I am Deanna Potter, your host for Safty Sales and Business Development. And with me today is our leading lady, Jessica Yaffa. She is the Director of Community Education with Practical Recovery. Thank you so much for joining us today, Jessica. We really do appreciate it. We look forward to spending some time with you today.
My pleasure, Deanna. Good morning.
Thank you. Our topic today is the revolving door of business development, how to create a steady stream of leads. And I know that so many of us, regardless of the sales cycle of our particular business or the industry we're in, we all are faced with that challenge of creating that steady stream of leads. And yet, I know, Jessica, that you are a superstar at this. And whether or not we as women like to boast and stand on that mountain and talk about when we're good at something, I'm going to brag for you because I've known you for many, many years now. And in the nearly 15 years that you've been in your industry and you have just been a leader at this, I've always been so impressed with you, especially with the addiction and rehabilitation industry that you've become such a leader in. I've always been so impressed with you. So I want to just dive right in and just start with real good content. Tell me, what are some of the two or three key fundamentals that you focus on in order to achieve such successful results when it comes to business development in your area of expertise?
It took me a little while in order to determine who my best referral sources were going to be. And so I spent the first few years of my career really sort of flip-flopping all over the place, meeting with all sorts of different people with all kinds of different backgrounds, doing all sorts of different work in order to really discover that there was a very small, for all intents and purposes, a very small sort of piece of the market that was going to actually have the capacity to refer to the industry that I work within. And so rather than then spending the next several years continuing to feel like I was sort of spreading myself too thin, I then got very specific in and streamlined about who I was going to be spending my time in relationship with and let go of this sort of concept that more is better.
Well, you know, that's a brilliant observation because I think that that is something, you know, as I coach business individuals, as many listeners know, and that is something I think we're also guilty of. We get so overwhelmed with the idea of I've got to go generate the leads, you know, where's the best effort, and we spread ourselves all over. I kind of call it that scattered mentality. And we look around and we see everybody else appearing to be successful in what they're doing, and we start to do the I need to go there, I need to go there, I need to go there, and that fear of, am I not doing everything I should instead of just concentrating and narrowing in on the best return on our investment? How did you start to know where that was, and how did you just gain the confidence and trust to just continue to be consistent and stay in one area? And I guess, when did you start, how long did it take before you started to see the results really start to happen?
So good questions, and I'll sort of break it down and speak to each of those as best as I can. It took me, I'd say, probably a good 3 years or so in order to really determine where I needed to be spending my efforts, and it's because it took me that long to also identify that I should be tracking the results of my referrals. And so while I have always been really good at thanking a referral source for a referral, developing and maintaining relationship, continuing to be in touch with those that that I meet and want to build relationship with, one of the things that I was not so good at was developmental organization. And so for those first few years of my career, I had no tracking tools in place that allowed me to really see sort of where the referrals were coming from, not in terms of who it was that was referring as an individual, but was this a therapist? Was this a hospital? Was this a large organization and a human resources department? And so it was after that three-year mark or so where I continued to sort of feel like I was constantly needing to be everywhere and really finding myself all over the place and exhausted by the end of the day with very little return, that I recognized that if I spent some time to look at where my referrals were coming from and sort of grouped them by either profession or category, that I could then really start to streamline my efforts in those places because I had some data behind me or some proof, rather, that in fact this is where my time was best invested.
Excellent. So I'm going to ask something very logistic. Did you create your own tracking systems, or did you go out and find a system that worked for you? You know, we talk a lot about CRM, customer relation management tools, large and small, Salesforce or Zoho, and, you know, a lot of different businesses, whether it's a small business owner or a corporation, small, mid, or large. Was it something where you started tracking yourself? How did you really start to approach it?
Yes, for the first several years of tracking, it was as simple as an Excel spreadsheet, and every mm-hmm. time we received a referral, that referral went into the Excel spreadsheet, and this is obviously one of your most favorite things. I'm sure you've talked about this a lot. There was color attached to each of the referral categories, and so I was able to very clearly and very quickly see, was it a hospital that referred, was it a therapist that referred, was it a large business organization that referred, so that at the end of each quarter, when I was putting together my results for the quarter, I was able to very easily categorize where our referrals had come from, and therefore sort of re-strategize around where I wanted to spend my efforts in the following quarter based on where the results were coming from. And so it cost no money. I am not a tech-savvy person, and to be honest, organization is not one of my strong suits either. So I had to do something really simple. I had to use something that I could upload on a regular basis. When I was out and about meeting with clients and I got a call from, say, one of our intake departments saying, oh, we just received a referral from so-and-so, I would want to pull up my laptop and upload it right away. And so it couldn't be anything that was difficult. Otherwise, it would be very difficult to keep up with. And so in those beginning years, it was really just about that.
Okay, great. So I heard that, you know, your system, you use a laptop, so you're very portable and mobile. I hear you use a color coding system, and that it sounds like you did reviews on a quarterly basis then, based on your lead generation activity and your business development activity?
That's correct. So I created some goals for myself in addition to the goals that my organization was looking at, and I was able to then sort of track whether I was meeting my own goals and where I was in terms of the goals of the organization also. And so we would come together, I shouldn't say would, we still, no matter where I'm working, come together on a quarterly basis and take a look at those goals and objectives, and where did the referrals come from this quarter, and where are we in terms of referral numbers, and were there more direct referrals this quarter than last? Were there more referrals in this particular area versus this area this quarter, and what does that say about where we want to invest our time and energy and effort this next quarter, and are there revisions that need to be made around our goals and objectives based on what we're seeing this quarter?
Outstanding. Now, I happen to know you've told me before, Jessica, that, you know, some of your relationships were local to where you are based, but you have a database that stretches nationwide, correct?
Correct.
And how do you find maintaining and cultivating and engaging in relationships are different locally versus nationwide, and how do you continue to strengthen relationships when they are across the mile?
That's a great question, and it's really twofold. It is different to maintain relationships when they are local and you're able to engage face-to-face regularly versus when they are in other parts of the country. And yet, there are lots of ways and opportunities to connect regularly with those that we have relationships with outside of our local area. And some of the ways that I've determined to really be most successful are these. When I initially engage with someone who's in another part of the country, it usually happens face-to-face. And so either I'm traveling to a particular region where I want to develop business and I set appointments according to who I believe could potentially have the capacity to refer to our organization and vice versa. And when I set those appointments, the intention behind those appointments is really to get to know that other person and what they do with the desire to refer to them as well. And so when I pick up the phone to set those appointments, and keep in mind that this can certainly be done even if you're not intending to meet face-to-face, you pick up the phone and basically say, "Hi, I'm so-and-so, and I live in this area. This is the kind of work that I do. I came across you and the work that you do, and I'm really interested in learning more about you." I always preface the conversation with, "I'm interested in learning about you and the work that you do," with the intention of building a co-referral relationship. I have much better success in that, whether it's a local relationship or a national relationship, than I do when I pick up the phone and say, "I'd like to come meet with you and tell you about what I do."
Okay,
so
excellent.
Anytime I start the conversation, it's always with, I've heard about you and the wonderful work that you're doing, and I'd really like to either meet or have a phone conversation or set up a conference call or share an email back and forth about the work that you do, with the intention of really learning about the services that each of us provide, hoping that ultimately we're able to refer to one another. And so it starts there. And once a person feels like you're invested in them, rather than just wanting to, quote-unquote, sell them something, ultimately the relationship starts from a very different place. And so that's kind of piece one. Piece two then becomes, if I'm planning to travel there, obviously you develop the rapport face-to-face in the very same way that you would if it's a local relationship. And then when I return home, do things like follow-up phone calls. I find out when the person's birthday is. I send them a birthday card. If they have children and I know that their children are involved in certain activities or events, say it's the fall and I know that her son plays Pop Warner football, I may send a funny note about football and wishing her son good luck with the season. If we receive a referral, obviously I'm going to send a gift basket, et cetera. And I tag myself in my data system once a month, especially with those national referrals, to ensure that I'm either shooting them an email, letting them know that I'm thinking of them, sending them either a note, a card, a small gift, letting them know how important they and their relationship are to me. And I may even do things like pick up the phone and say, "Hey, I heard that such and such is going on in your area. Just wanted to make sure that you're okay." Or, "Wow, what a wonderful news report about such and such that's happening in your area. That must be a really exciting time for you, and I'd love to hear more about it." So anything that I can do to personalize that relationship, even from afar, I'm going to spend the time to do.
Gotcha. Wonderful. So you definitely do cross over to that personal touch on a regular basis.
It's all about relationship at the end of the day.
Gotcha. And tell me, now, do you block time during your regular week where you specifically sit down and say, "Okay, on Fridays, I spend my half days, Richie, I'm going through my database and making sure I'm cultivating these relationships"? Or are you one of those people that just fits it in when you can?
No, I tried to be the kind of person that could fit it in when I could and realized that there was never enough time in the day. And so I would have the best intentions of doing that on any given week and realize by the end of the week that I hadn't made any phone calls. And so now I really have to block the time. And it typically ends up being somewhere between, I'd say, 5 and 10 hours a week that I spend either on the phone or sending an email or sending out a card and being really sort of intentional about that rather than just fitting it in where I can.
Gotcha. And are you comfortable sharing with our listeners just approximately how large is your database at this point in time after all the years that you've been, you know, networking and connecting people?
Oh, gosh. I think I've got probably about 1,500.
Wow. Okay. Great. So to our listeners, if Jessica's doing somewhere between 5 to 10 hours a week with 1,500 in her database, take a look at your database. If you're sitting at 200, this should not be taking a lot of time. Just, you know, you can do it. All right, so let's keep going. The coaching me can't help myself. All right, so tell me something that I love all these wonderful, I mean, these are great, tangible, like, things that we can put in place for ourselves in our business and in our routine immediately when we hang up today. But talk to us about some of your biggest challenges that you face, because we know that, you know, we all have them. What are some of the things that you think you struggle with even today, just trying to fit it in and get it right?
Well, one of my biggest sort of most obvious challenges, I think, which you touched on just for a brief moment in the introduction, is that I work in the field of addiction recovery and trauma treatment. And so there is a lot of stigma out there around who this happens to, what this looks like, who's affected, and what it means to need or ask for help, right? And so I have to start by really addressing that stigma and really creating safe spaces for conversations, not just with the individuals and families that may be affected, those that are coming in contact with them, whether it's a large business whose human resource department has to address issues surrounding substance abuse, or it's a hospital who is understaffed and often don't have the manpower to provide the resources in the way that they would like to, but just can't, or it's an individual therapist who says, gosh, this isn't really an area that I specialize in, and I choose not to see or address issues surrounding substance abuse or severe trauma because it's not my area of specialty. And so to have to sort of break through all of that in order to even begin to have the conversation about what it is that I do and that the organization that I'm representing does, that in itself is probably the biggest challenge.
And so
I
have
a lot of – sorry,
no,
go ahead.
Continue, please.
And so I spend a lot of my time initially really talking about the sheer number of people that this affects, eliminating the stigma around this, the fact that that many believe that this is a disease, and certainly if not a disease, it's ultimately a method of self-medicating our pain away, pain which many of us deal with on a regular basis for all sorts of reasons, and that this is just one of the ways that some people either choose to or have been forced to medicate that pain away, and that we as a provider community really have not just the ability but the responsibility to meet them where they are in order to really uncover that pain and get to the underlying factors that need addressing so that a person can move beyond alcoholism or addictive behaviors. And so that's sort of where it starts. And once you create that safe space for conversation and really align yourself with either that organization or that therapist or that hospital, let me be a resource. Come to me when you get stuck. Allow me to alleviate some of the stressors that are on your plate because you are already spread so thin. Please feel free to come to me and utilize me in that way. And if I determine that, say, Practical Recovery, which is the organization that I work for, is not the right fit, ultimately, I have enough resources around the country at this point that I will ensure you that I can get your client to where he or she needs to be and that we will allow them the opportunity to be treated in the way that they deserve. That really can alleviate a lot of pressure and stress from those that are referring because they may feel like, well, gosh, I can't even begin to have conversations like this with either my employees, my human resources department, my hospital staff, my clients, because if, in fact, I uncover that there are issues there, I don't have the capacity or the resources to handle it.
Sure. And do you find not only do those individuals don't have the resources, there's a lot of fear and a discomfort about just breaching these kind of subjects. They're so private and so personal, and if they don't have the training or the ability, they just go into avoidance, I would assume.
Absolutely, which is why actually you and I have talked in conversation about the fact that in addition to the director of community education and being an employee of Practical Recovery, I really pride myself on being an addiction recovery specialist. I want to be the resource in the community that people come to when they are stuck or in fear or have questions or need a resource that they don't potentially have direct access to. And that can really be – that is something that can look very similar no matter the business you're in, right? And so I'm sure you've talked both on this show and with many of your coaching clients about the fact that you may be spending time in relationship with people that will never refer to you directly, but they're going to come to you when they know that they've got somebody that needs help in the area in which you specialize. And because it's about relationship and rapport and trust at the end of the day, many of your referrals are going to come to you indirectly in that way.
Yes. Yes, excellent. Yeah. So one thing we always like to touch on a little bit here at Women Leading the Way Radio, as a women's radio show, we sometimes touch on the unique challenges that we sometimes face as women in business. So we always like to ask our leading ladies, have you ever had any experiences in which you felt maybe a difference in opportunity or an outcome in a business situation because you were a woman in that situation? versus maybe even maybe how you approach something differently versus the way maybe a colleague did as a man?
Well, I will tell you that the addiction field specifically is unique in that there are as many women as there are men, which is not the case in many of the businesses that I'm sure you interface with, talk about, coach, et cetera. And so I'm at an advantage there, I believe. However, I will also say that when you go into a hospital setting and are meeting with a room full of doctors, say, most of whom are often men, that can pose a certain set of challenges. And so what I do feel like I've needed to do, and it's been very beneficial for me, is to really educate myself as best as I can, not just about my organization and the work that we do, but ultimately the way that addiction may affect them, so that when I come into a room full of doctors, I'm able to not only say, this is what practical recovery is about, and this is when ultimately you may want to consider referring to us, but I also then can have a conversation about, gosh, I know that on any given day, ultimately you treat X number of patients that could be struggling with alcoholic or addictive behavior and not even realize it. These are some of the ways that you, these are some of the things that you may want to look for in order to identify that this may be happening for your patient, and some of the questions you may want to ask. And so let's talk about assessing differently. Let's talk about ensuring that we have resources in-house, and I'm happy, of course, to be sort of the center of putting together those resources for you and your team. But if I can speak to the work that they do and sort of bridge the gap between what they do and what I do, ultimately I find that they listen to me differently.
Excellent. Great advice. Wonderful. Wonderful. So, Jessica, I know that in addition to your professional role with Practical Recovery, you are also a recent author and a speaker and survivor and a very strong advocate for victims of domestic violence. You have a nonprofit called No Silence, No Violence, and recently launched your memoir called Until Mine. And I want you to tell us a little bit about the purpose behind No Silence, No Violence and where you hope to take it in the future.
Of course. So there is a tremendous overlap between addiction, addiction recovery, substance use and abuse itself, and trauma. And so as a survivor myself of extreme domestic violence, I have the opportunity in my work life to deal with and potentially be a resource for those that are suffering as a result of trauma, oftentimes linked to relationship abuse, sexual trauma, et cetera, and can then really invest a lot of time and energy and effort specifically around providing resources, education for those that are survivors of domestic violence and sexual assault. And so the overlap is really, although it can be looked at as very sad, for me, is really a very beautiful thing to be able to sort of spend both my professional work life and the rest of my life providing resources and education in both of these arenas because there's such crossover. And so No Silence, No Violence has really worked hard to come alongside survivors of domestic violence and sexual trauma, many of whom are also struggling with substance misuse issues as a result of that trauma, in order to really provide very tangible resources like food for those that have none, shelter for those that have none, flights or rental deposits or whatever we may need in order to help a woman flee from a dangerous situation, while also providing education on high school and college campuses to large organizations, human resource departments who may not understand or recognize the importance of addressing domestic violence in the workplace because it affects the amount of absences. It affects the entire workforce in all sorts of ways. And so to really be determined to kind of meet the need in all sorts of arenas is what I am committed to and really fired up about. Mine Until, which is my memoir, which launched, I'd say, about a month ago now, has had a tremendous response in that it really speaks to, in a very detailed way, what it looks like to be involved in a relationship where there is some severe domestic violence, but it also speaks to the triumph that has come out of that and ultimately has the capacity to provide hope to anyone that either is in or has been in or has a friend, family member, loved one that has been in a relationship where there has been a component of domestic violence. And so the intention behind that book is to really be a source of hope and strength, and to also begin to really have the capacity to change the way we have conversations around domestic violence and eliminate the stigma that exists there as well.
You know, and you mentioned the word stigma, and I think both in some of the things I've learned and talking to you before this interview and having read your book in preparation, both in the rehabilitation industry as well as the domestic violence, that epidemic, I think we as a society have an idea of what an addiction, a person with addiction looks like, or a person who is involved in domestic violence looks like. And I'm learning that we have no idea. It could be your brother, your sister, it could be your mother. You don't know. And I think that, you know, the work you're doing professionally, the work that Practical Recovery does is just tremendous. And the cause that you're leading is just something to be just so proud of. So I would love to give our listeners the opportunity, should they have any questions or should they want to follow up with you, either with information to perhaps they have someone or they're running a resource, human resource department, they'd like to reach out and learn more about your program at Practical Recovery, or would like to about maybe come out to a college campus or share more information about your nonprofit, how can they reach you and what would be the best way to do that?
Thank you for that. So for information about the addiction treatment program, you can go directly to practicalrecovery.com. For information about the nonprofit attached to the domestic violence and sexual assault work that I'm doing, you can go to nosilencenoviolence.org. And for inquiries about either, please feel free to email me directly at jessica@jessicayaffa, which is my last name, Y-A-S like Fred, F like Fred, A.org.
Wonderful. So number one most important thing to really boost your business development leads, what's the one thing you can leave us with today?
It's all about relationship. Invest in those relationships. Don't worry about the numbers. It's all about quality, not quantity.
Quality, not quantity. Even speaking from a woman who's got a 1,500-person quality database, did everybody hear that? Of course, I will give you that you've done it over nearly 15 years, so let's not beat up on ourselves, people. Thank you all so very, very much. Jessica, thank you for just gifting us with such wonderful, tangible things and so much inspiration. You are definitely a leader in your industry and, you know, just so inspiring. Your story and your input today has really helped, I know, many, many of us. I want to thank you, and thank you all for listening. Please don't forget to join us next month for business, Sassy Sales and Business Development. I'm your host, Deanna Potter, your petite powerhouse, and I want to thank you all for listening. Have a wonderful day, and also next week back here on Women Leading the Way Radio for another wonderful show hosted by Connected Women of Influence. Thank you all for joining us.
Women Leading the Way is produced by Connected Women of Influence, the premier private membership organization where life-focused, business-to-business executive and professional women connect, collaborate, and cultivate a vast network of high-level affiliations, resources, and professional relationships. For more information about Connected Women of Influence, please visit our website at connectedwomenofinfluence.com. Women Leading the Way is produced by Connected Women of Influence, the premier private membership organization.